Our mission at Facebook is to make the world more open and connected. Newsfeed takes all of the things that your friends are doing and it puts them right in front of you so you can see them in one place.
Facebook's Mark Zuckerberg on yet another convenient way to share. But there's a trove of personal information on social media sites that we are unwittingly sharing with anyone determined to track us. By using Facebook likes, researchers at Cambridge University were able to build astonishingly accurate and detailed profiles of people, from their politics to emotional stability to their parents' marital status. This morning, the sleuths on the trail of your digital footprint. Also today...
Where are you going?
Towards Mount Gardner. Are you going that way?
I'm going up Adams Road. That's
okay.
For you?
Sure.
Hi, Edward. I'm Denise.
You pick up people much?
For a long time, hitchhiking in Canada has been synonymous with danger, from the Highway of Tears to Clifford Olson. But from Bowen Island, B.C. to Washington, D.C., ride-sharing is seen as practical, eco-friendly, and downright community-building. In an hour, we've got your stories of hitchhiking through the nation as we explore new efforts to use an old way of going down the road. And...
The first thing you smell is bitter orange and rum. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was the rum.
And when I smelled this, the first thing I thought of was Cuba.
They say memory can be triggered by a scent, which may be why fragrance carries such romance. We'll delve into that world and the EU bureaucrats looking to restrict it in half an hour. But first, picking through your digital detritus. I'm Anna Maria Tremonti. This is The Current. If you like that sound, or more specifically, if you have liked thunderstorms on Facebook, there's a good chance you have a higher than average IQ. If you also liked the Colbert Report, curly fries, or science, your odds go up even more. This is the result of new research from the Psychometrics Center at Cambridge University in England. Researchers there discovered they could build a surprisingly accurate and wide-ranging profile of someone's identity, interests, and habits based on what they liked on Facebook. And if you're not on Facebook, liking something is just a way of publicly displaying your affection by clicking on the little thumbs up icon. Michal Koshinsky is one of the researchers behind the new work, and he is in Castelrotto, Italy. Good morning.
Good morning, everyone.
What motivated your study?
As a psychometrician, I do study human traits and human behavior. And we're building some models to predict personality based on your online behavior, in this case, Facebook likes. But we have realized that you can predict personality pretty accurately and kind of made us think, hey, maybe you can actually predict other traits as well. And then we kind of looked into our database and we found out that we have some more data about people and we just attempted predicting it. In some cases, like in case of IQ, I thought, hey, if you can predict personality, you obviously can predict IQ as well. But in other cases, like divorce of your parents, I didn't really have much hope that this would be predictable from the stuff you like on Facebook. It turned out that while in relatively low accuracy, you can still make those predictions.
Can you walk us through the methodology that you used for the study?
Well, we collected a sample of a few million people, but then we limited ourselves to 60,000 users from US. We got the list of the likes. They gave us permission to use the likes. And we also measured various traits like personality, IQ, happiness using professional, genuine questionnaires. And we recorded some additional data about those folks, like the religious views, political views, or whether the parents were divorced or not. And then we trained so-called machine learning model, which is a computer software that tries to figure out the connections between different variables. We trained it to predict various traits like homosexuality, parents' divorce, or personality traits and stuff you like on Facebook.
And so help me understand how the likes on Facebook led you to very solid conclusions about personality traits, sexual identity, politics.
Each behavior that you can express in the online environment carries a bit of information about your underlying traits, which is amazing because it allows us to improve the products and services to a large extent. You can imagine computers products and services, being able to adjust their behavior, adjust their offer, adjust to your individual traits.
I want to ask you about that because some people would be wary of that. What are the implications of this kind of being able to zero in on this kind of information?
The implications in the large part are totally positive. And we see this already happening around us. So you can take Amazon and book recommendations. This amazing system helped me to, you know, find so many amazing books online by predicting what is my book days based on my previous book purchases. But of course, as any new technology, this technology also carries a lot of risks with itself. The obvious risk is that someone can use the same records that you use to predict your book days to predict things that they really don't want to share with anyone, like their sexual orientation.
What about governments using this kind of information, or even employers?
Well, you can imagine many good ways in which governments and employers can use it. For instance, they can use it to cheaply and on a massive scale assess your individual traits, which is good because it allows to match you with the right job. And it also saves you a lot of time on filling the questionnaires. You can think that governments also can use it to, you know, understand the citizens better and try to figure out, you know, where they're happy, when they're unhappy, and so on. There's also a huge risk associated with it. You know, you can imagine governments doing predictions that we don't really want them to do. But of course, you can also think about conservative governments in less democratic countries than Canada using predictions of this kind to screen their populations, you know, potentially even imprison individuals who are, let's say, homosexual. In many countries, homosexuality is still a crime.
What surprised you most about what you found out?
It totally surprised us that you can predict things like parents' divorce using records of Facebook likes. This is amazing. This shows that a life event, a very important event like that, kind of leaves a trace in your behavior for a very, very long time, a trace that shows up, that surfaces in stuff like liking things on Facebook.
That is really fascinating. Do you register your likes on Facebook?
Well, of course, I love Facebook. I use Facebook a lot, and I don't have any doubts that liking itself is an amazing way of, you know, sharing your interest with the others. But I believe that we should also remember that digital environment is very much public. Even if we think we do something in private, on our private computer, what we do is being widely recorded.
Michal Koshinsky, thank you for your insights.
Thanks a lot for your time.
Michal Koshinsky is the Director of Operations for the Psychometrics Center at England's Cambridge University. He was in Castelrotto, Italy today. Now, your Facebook likes aren't the only digital signposts you leave out there on the internet. Last month, Time magazine set up an experiment to find out everything the internet knows about one single person.
I'm Joel Stein, a columnist for Time, and I performed a little experiment on myself. I wanted to find out what Google knows about me. Not just Google, but a host of companies online and off that mine the vast amount of data taken from the websites I check out, the stuff I buy, my emails, my Facebook photos, my warranty cards, my customer reward cards. I am, unbelievably, even more interesting to other people than I am to myself. So here's the data mining on me. Google's ad networks know I'm a guy who's interested in politics, Asian food, perfume, celebrity gossip, animated movies, and crime. I didn't know about the crime part. They also believe I don't care about books and literature, or people and society. Based on my $180 splurge on women's lingerie, Blue Kai thinks I'm an 18 to 19-year-old woman who likes clothing and shoes. Xlate thinks I have a high net worth and dig green living. And Teledyne, which says I'm a writer at Time and a highly assimilated Jew. Rapleaf, a dating mining company that was recently banned by Facebook from viewing users' pages because it improperly used people's personal information, thinks I have no kids, work as a medical professional, and don't care about food. Rapleaf clearly does not read my column. The Nielsen Company uses its connections.
And on it goes, like someone rummaging through my digital underwear drawer. Each of these pieces of information about me is sold to advertisers for about 0.25, who then deliver me an internet ad, send me a catalog, or mail me a credit card offer. You know, everything has seemed free for the last few years? It wasn't. It's just that no one told you that instead of money, you're paying with your personal information. I'm Joel, the highly assimilated Jewish Wi-Fi warrior influencer, 18 to 19-year-old clothes-loving woman with a graduate degree in the medical profession, Stein, for Time.
Who knew? I guess we all did. You can read all Joel Stein's discoveries in his piece in Time magazine called Data Mining, How Companies Now Know Everything About You. We have posted a link to the story on our website. Go to cbc.ca/thecurrent. Accurate or not, companies such as Facebook and Google are collecting a lot of personal information from their users. James Harkin has been watching this trend closely. He is a writer for The Guardian and the Financial Times newspapers. He's also the author of Lost in Cyberbia, The Dangerous Idea That's Changing How We Live and Who We Are. James Harkin is in London, England. Good morning.
Good morning.
What do you think of this Facebook study?
I'm skeptical, to be honest. I mean, there are two different questions here. First of all, there's the question of whether this stuff works. And then secondly, if it does work, whether it's potentially scary. My feeling, I mean, just anecdotally, you know, the stuff that I like on Facebook, I generally like it out of a sense of guilt, because a friend sort of suggested that I would like it. Or sometimes people like things on Facebook because, you know, they've been offered a free Snickers or something in return for liking Snickers. So I think the like thing is not a great tool in general. I think that the better way to get at what people are and what they want is perhaps to think about the things they really, really love. So the movies, for example, that people list, the music that people list, is being used in different studies in America to predict voting preferences and sexuality and things. And I think we really need to sort of drill down to the things that people love rather than the things that they say they like on Facebook, which can be a bit random.
Okay, but there's still information out there. Who benefits from the ability to collect and analyze vast quantities of data that comes from what we're doing out there?
Well, I mean, it's an interesting question. The obvious people who benefit are big companies, but that presupposes all kinds of questions. I mean, I often get quite enervated with people who complain a lot on Facebook that their data is being sold on. I mean, what do they think would happen? We're all using this service, this little platform or this turf for free, and at some point they have to pay the rent. The question then becomes, is this data any good? Facebook is in the business now, and it's sort of perspiring heavily because it needs to make a lot of money out of this data to justify its valuation. And in order to do that, I think it needs to be a lot cleverer about what it can get out of this data, because it's possible that the data as is isn't useful for very much. Big companies are interested in it, but big companies are also skeptical about what Facebook can offer. And I think we need a lot more work on this data to figure out whether it actually can be used for what they say it can. Big claims are being made for all of this stuff by companies with an incentive to make those claims. Big data is one of the biggest business ideas out there, and I think we need to be skeptical about some of its claims.
Well, what are some of the ways that we actually shed data during the course of our day? How much of our personal information ends up there? Can you take us through some of that?
Well, there's obviously the things that we type into Google search box. There's the things that we post on Twitter, which can be used by sentiment analysts to get a good sense of our mood and a really wonderful insight into the collective psyche. But beyond that, you know, there's a real danger that we're caught up in sort of a frenzy around sexy things like Facebook and Google, because for the last 10 or 15 years, we've been giving our shopping data to big supermarkets, and there's an argument that our real behavior, evidenced in the things that we buy, in some ways might be better than all of this Facebook and Google stuff in terms of predicting what we like. And the real value of big data might be in getting a hold of all of that and putting it all in the same system. So, for example, Walmart have used people's liking for Pop-Tarts in America to predict various things. So, for example, it turns out that in America, whenever there's a hurricane, people buy more Pop-Tarts. So whenever Walmart knows that a hurricane's coming along, they stock lots of Pop-Tarts. So those kind of interesting correlations that big data analysts can find in the ether, I think, are going to happen more and more.
Okay, well, James Harkin, I've got someone nodding to what you're saying here in the studio with me. Virgil Evans is an information architect at Ariad Marketing Communications Agency. He's in Toronto. Good morning, Virgil.
Good morning. Whoops,
sorry, is your microphone on? You are. Okay. Now, you have control of a lot of your personal information through self-tracking. Can you describe what that is?
Well, self-tracking, in the most basic way, is being able to
use.
I think we are having a microphone problem. While we fix that, I'll just get James to answer one more question while we fix Virgil's microphone. James, some of this, but the fact is, some of this data, and I touched on this with our previous guest, can it be used in ways that we don't know? Can it be used by governments? Like, we're talking about data mining and large things, but couldn't someone zero in on one person's data if they wanted to?
They can. It's a process known as de-anonymization. Most of the excuses used by big companies at the moment are based on the fact that our data is anonymous. We're simply anonymous data points. But if you put two or three data sets together, it's very easy to find out how people are. I think the real danger comes not from the companies which simply want to sell us more Pop-Tarts, but from the governments who might move further, and many local police forces in America are already doing something like this, move further into areas like preventive policing. In other words, taking our liking for Pop-Tarts to suggest that in future, the kind of people who might eat lots of Pop-Tarts might also become criminals. Now, all of this is incredibly speculative. It's often used as a way of saving money, and it simply may not work, and it may have terrible privacy implications.
Okay, well, let's think about that. We'll get, Virgil, can we hear you now?
Hello, can you hear me?
Oh, there you go. Okay, so what are you doing with self-tracking? What is that?
Well, self-tracking is really just setting up things like Google Alerts or different search criteria around your name and always monitoring that. So anytime that your name shows up in a Google search or on a website, you'll get an alert. You can check that site out if it's the wrong kind of site where that they might not have accurate information. You can ask them to take it down. And then you can also use other ways of blog posts and sharing good content on the web to help control your profile.
Now, why do you collect so much data about yourself?
Well, it's like Google and searching is the core way of how we first introduce ourselves to any topic or any person. And our, you know, as an individual who works on the internet, lives on the internet, and makes the majority of spend the majority of my time through the internet, it's the best way to ensure that the presence of who I am is my own presence and not something that's created by a website scraper.
Do you have any concerns about sharing information with online companies like Facebook or Google?
Well, the challenge with sharing information, as always, just like I wouldn't tell someone on a telephone call what my credit card number is or sign up for the first person who knocks on my door, the internet is just another extension of our public persona. So the thought is if my comfort level is I know what I'm willing to share publicly, and I just choose to do that, whether it's digital or in the physical.
I have a clip I'd like to play. This is Adi Kamdar, an activist with the Electronic Frontier Foundation. Listen to this.
I think it just underscores the need for control and transparency over shared information. With likes, for example, here's a feature that is supposed to be public. It's supposed to be shared. I think people should know, or people should have the right to know, why certain advertisements are targeting them, especially if it's an advertisement that's targeted towards a specific character or specific trait. And people should have the ability to opt out, for example, or to say, I don't want to be tracked for these particular purposes, or I don't want to be tracked using this information.
So, Virgil Evans, should there be more accountability from online companies?
I think there should be more awareness by everyone involved, definitely. Us as Canadians are fairly aware of our public persona or public presence. In other parts of the world, people get persecuted for just showing an affinity or an interest in topics. And in some parts of the world, there's a lot of freedom, like in the U.S., to both ask for privacy and also celebrate the big business of selling data.
James Harkins, I want to ask a little bit more about accountability from companies, because there's a story in the news yesterday that Google acknowledged to U.S. state officials in a case brought by 38 states that it violated people's privacy during its Street View mapping project because it, and I'm quoting here from the New York Times, casually scooped up passwords, emails, and other personal information from unsuspecting computer users. Some of this data that we leave there, even internally, can be used, can it not?
What do you mean internally?
Well, it's not other people looking to. It can be their own employees who don't know about privacy or scoop up our information.
Well, I think these debates are going to be rolling on for the next decades. These sort of interminable tussles over privacy and the control of data. The problem is, really, once the genie is out of the bottle, it's very difficult for us to go into these systems and narrow down exactly what we own and what the companies own. Hence, the torturous privacy statement on Facebook, which lasts for pages and pages and pages, and you have no idea of its meaning at the end. So I'm not sure that we can really put the genie back in the bottle in terms of claiming our information. I think rather than go down the legal route and find out who owns what, it's better simply to have a much more realistic assumption of what this information can be used for, what it's good for, and more importantly, what do we want to use it for as a society, rather than simply let companies and governments have a free-for-all. But just to come back to a point that Virgil made, on a slightly different note, I've been reporting the war on Syria, and a reporter friend of mine pointed out that 6 weeks ago, someone who he met recently in Damascus had liked a picture of a rebel tank in Syria, and this person was subsequently tracked down by the Syrian army and is still in prison. So there really is the potential for authoritarian governments to use these likes, even if they're not particularly accurate.
Well, Virgil is nodding in agreement. We're going to have to leave it there. We're actually out of time. Gentlemen, thank you very much for your time. Virgil Evans is an information architect with Ariad Marketing Communications Agency. He was in Toronto. James Harkin is the author of Lost in Cyberbia. He was in London, England. No one from Facebook was available to speak to us this morning. A spokesperson did send a statement which reads, in part, no matter the vehicle for information, a bumper sticker, yard sign, logos on clothing, or other data found online, it's already been proven that it's possible for social scientists to draw conclusions about personal attributes based on these characteristics. End quote. Well, stay with us. Coming up next, the European Union's proposal to ban lists of ingredients that could change the perfume you use. This is The Current.